Welcome to the second episode of our new podcast series hosted by the CGA IGC Research Committee. Each episode will interview a former recipient of the CGA IGC Research Grant and highlight their work. My name is Katie Newman, and I am a cancer genetic counselor at Fox Chase Cancer Center and a member of the CGA IGC Research Committee. Hi, everyone. I'd like to welcome Dr. Giovanna Torrezon. She received her master's in genetics in 2008 and her PhD in oncology in 2014. She is currently an associate researcher at AC Camargo Cancer Center in São Paulo, Brazil, where her research focuses on hereditary colorectal cancers, rare tumors, and variant classification. In addition, she is a collaborator for the Prospective Lynch Syndrome Database and a ClinGen curator. Dr. Torrezon was awarded the CGA IGC Research Grant in 2022 for her work entitled KRAS G12C, the neglected biomarker for identifying UIH-associated polyposis patients. She presented her preliminary data from this research at the CGA annual meeting last year in Las Vegas and was selected for an oral abstract at the 2024 Insight meeting. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for the kind introduction. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you've already had such an impressive career with publishing at least 59 scientific articles, many focused on hereditary cancer. And I'm curious what initially drew you to hereditary cancer research. And really, given your focus on rare tumors and rare variants, what are some of the unique challenges that you faced with these specific research interests?
As a biologist, I became interested in the field of genetics since my second year as an undergrad, and this drove me to pursue first an internship in a lab and then a master in this area. And when I first heard about hereditary cancer syndromes during my master, I became fascinated by understanding how inherited variants can contribute to cancer development, and also how these syndromes are great models to understand carcinogenesis overall, not only hereditary, but also sporadic. Then at my PhD at AC Camargo from 2010 to 2014, I had the opportunity to work on a study that involved two of my passions that were molecular biology and cancer genetics. But also I could see the birth of modern clinical genomics as I ended up working with the first NGS platforms. And I believe that as curiosity is one of the greatest drivers of a scientist, when you are working with a field that's rapidly evolving like cancer genomics is, this instigates you to learn more and to discover more about your topic of interests. Regarding my current research focus now that are rare tumors and variant classification, one of the main difficulties is to find enough patients with the specific gene alterations. Because of the rarity and phenotypic variation, identifying significant and robust associations between these rare tumors and genes is really challenging. And you need to combine several data like somatic, clinical, and functional data to get into conclusions. Of course, variant classification guidelines are also constantly changing, and this will require a lot of study and updated knowledge for you to work on. And besides all the scientific interests that I have in these areas, I think that being able to contribute to better diagnosis for patients and their families is the most gratifying thing about this research field.
I certainly think that's a common motivation for those of us that work in this field. And despite being busy with your own research, you are still able to find time to be part of multiple societies and expert groups, including the Prospective Lynch Syndrome Database, ClinGen, and various genetics working groups within Brazil and Latin America. You became a member of CGA IGC back in 2022. How did you first hear about CGA and what motivated you to become involved in this group?
I first heard about CGA IGC in 2011, quite some years ago, when I went to an American Society of Human Genetics meeting in Montreal, and the CGA IGC annual meeting was held there as a pre-meeting event. I was in the second year of my PhD working on polyposis and sequencing APC and multi-age bystander sequencing, what now seems ages and ages ago. And I was really excited to be in a meeting where most of the speakers were authors of seminal papers that I had as reference to my thesis. Then, fast forward a little bit, after working a couple of years more in the diagnostic field and get involved with other syndromes and other tumors. I restarted a project with multiply-age-associated polyposis syndrome, or MAP, and this new study and the possibility to submit it as a grant to CGAIGC brought me closer to this group again. I think the focus of this organization on promoting research and fostering international collaborations and improving patient care are perfectly aligned with my research goals, and I hope to be a member of this community for many years to come.
And I think I speak for CGA to say we are happy to have you as well. And I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into the research that you've done through your CGA grant. Can you speak to the rationale behind how KRAS G12C can be used as a biomarker and its value?
Sure. We consider that KRAS G12C somatic mutation is a promising biomarker for identifying patients with MAP for a couple of reasons. First, KRAS testing is done in the clinical routine for the majority of colorectal cancer patients now, so this data is easily available in the clinics. Second, while this mutation is very common in MAP patients, appearing over 90% of colorectal cancers of these patients, it is really rare in sporadic tumors with less than 3%. This high specificity makes it a good indicator of MAP, and a couple of previous studies with smaller cohorts have shown that indeed 10 to 25% of colorectal cancer patients with KRAS G12C mutation had MAP. Another important point is that MAP phenotype is highly variable, with some MAP patients developing colorectal cancer in the absence of any polyps. And these, combined with its recessive inheritance pattern, leads to an underdiagnosis of the syndrome. So finally, although these previous studies suggested the use of KRAS G12C as a marker for identifying MAP patients, we don't see a widespread adoption of this biomarker. There are none official guidelines that recommend testing MUT1-AHD in patients with this somatic mutation. So we believe that changing this scenario would lead to identifying a large number of MAP patients that were previously undiagnosed. And this would allow appropriate follow-up, surveillance, and preventive measures for these individuals and their families. Also, identifying these high-risk patients through biomarkers is specifically important in countries like Brazil, where genetic testing is less accessible and where universal testing strategy, for example, for all colorectal cancers is far from being adopted.
Yeah, and to build on that, since you touched on genetic testing being less accessible in Brazil, can you please elaborate on the process of genetic testing in Brazil? And do you notice any trends in genetic testing in the Brazilian population or any of the changes that you anticipate in the future?
Yes, genetic testing for hereditary cancer and any other genetic condition in Brazil is growing, but we still face many challenges. Around 75% of the Brazilian population is dependent on our public health system that is called SUS. And on SUS, genetic testing is only available at few excellent centers, usually through research protocols. So most of the population does not have access to this genetic test. On the other hand, for the 25% of the Brazilian population that have private health insurance, genetic tests can be available if patients fulfill specific clinical criteria. But unfortunately, these criteria are not frequently updated or equivalent to NCCN guidelines, for example. Moreover, although NGS tests are much more accessible and efficient these days, the access to testing in the private setting is still expensive if you consider the Brazilian middle income, and it's uneven to all the regions of the country. Another important bottleneck we have to increase the access to genetic testing is the uneven and scarce number of geneticists in the country. And finally, we still have many patients and physicians that are unaware of the importance of genetic testing, leading to underdiagnosis of hereditary cancer syndromes in the country. And also this stress the importance of having both medical and patient education initiatives to increase the access to these tests. Fortunately, we do have some good news. More recent, there are nationwide genomic initiatives that are ongoing in the country, and I anticipate that they will aid to make genetic testing more accessible and to integrate them into healthcare.
And I really appreciate you sharing this perspective. Since CGA is an international group, I think it's important to also understand the context of how genetic testing is performed in various countries when we're analyzing and looking into different research studies that occur in countries other than our own. And so your research on the KRAS G12C is adding to a body of literature that has also explored this as a biomarker. And I'm curious, was any of your data unexpected compared with what was already out there in the literature? And what do you hope that your data will add to this body of literature?
We did expect to find a high frequency of MAP patients in our KRAS G12C cohort. And indeed, so far we have tested more than 200 patients with this somatic mutation. And the detection rate of germline pathogenic variants in Mutwai age was 11%. And the rate of biallelic confirmed germline variants was 8%. If we consider only patients under 60 years old, the MAP rate reached 16%, so pinpointing this gender group as a high-risk group of patients. And as an unexpected finding, we have investigated our monoallelic carriers of MUT2IH pathogenic variants, and we found that more than half of them had loss of heterozygosity or a second somatic mutation in MUT2IH in the tumor. So this data might indicate a rare tumorigenic route by which monoallelic carriers develop colorectal cancer through a second somatic hit in this gene. Also, we do have preliminary data that KRAS G12C could help to reclassify VUS in suspected MAP patients. And together, our data contributes to what is known from the literature that supports the use of KRAS G12C as a biomarker for MAP and represents the first analysis of this association in a Brazilian cohort. Additionally, we think our research highlights the importance of considering somatic mutations and dual molecular features in the classification of germline variants.
And really, the hope here is that as there is mounting evidence from your work and the work of others, that eventually this will contribute to a change in official guidelines for this particular group of patients. And as you continue your current research and you develop new research projects, how do you see the field of hereditary cancer research evolving in the next decade?
I think both the fields of hereditary cancer research and genomic medicine in general are rapidly evolving with promising advances in several areas. One advance that will likely happen in hereditary cancer is the increased use of paired germline and tumor comprehensive genomic profiling to all cancer patients. And this will allow for more precise interpretation of genetic mutations and for a more personalized risk assessment and therapies. I think that the development and the use of therapies specific targeting genetic mutations associated with hereditary cancers will also lead to improvements in treatment and outcomes and quality of life. And finally, as we get deeper understanding of factors affecting penetrance and expressivity of genetic variants, and more powerful cancer screening tests like liquid biopsy, for example, I think we will be able to move to a more personalized prevention and surveillance strategies, reducing cancer incidence and mortality, but also reducing the burden of current intense surveillance protocols that some of these patients have to go through, even if they don't have known high risk of cancer, according to other factors.
Certainly exciting what we can anticipate in the future. And finally, you serve as a professor and a mentor at the program of post-graduation in oncology at your institution. Is there any advice you like to provide your students and early investigators in regards to choosing and pursuing their research?
My advice for students and early investigators is that if you feel that science is your calling, you need to be dedicated, passionate, and very persistent about it. It's important to try to embrace every possibility to collaborate and share knowledge and learn from other students, researchers, and clinicians, because good science is a collaborative effort. And also to be aware that this is a challenging and competitive field, and many times it will be frustrating, especially considering that all the negative results, all the rejections of papers and grants that you for sure have during your career. But it's also very rewarding and a lot of fun.
And I think that's so important to state the reality of the field, that of course there will be challenges, but to those who are really passionate about the field, that they will see the benefit and really looking at that big picture. So thank you so much for your time, Dr. Torazan. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and we are looking forward to hearing more from you at future CGA conferences.
Thank you, Katie. It was a pleasure.